Well, hey, Vanguardista, can I be the very first person to wish you a Happy New Year? Mark wants to be the second person.
Happy New Year. And I'm saying that in a loud voice because everyone's got a hangover.
Yes. Well, I'm not, you know, is that right, though? Because here's the thing. I reckon that an awful lot of people,
yes,
who are our Vanguardista are smart enough to know that the whole New Year's Eve thing is a ridiculous shebang. And it gets to that midnight moment and you go, Happy New Year, what? Well, nothing really. It's just exactly the same. So I think that a sensible way of having a New Year's Eve is that you have a jolly good time and you sing Auld Lang Syne and you watch Jules Holland and you have a glass of your favourite thing.
Japanese whiskey.
And you don't go crazy. You wake up the next morning and you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
I don't feel it's New Year's Eve until you get the text from Rick Wakeman, which you must get as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Once a year I hear from Rick Wakeman at 8 o'clock on New Year's Eve. He says, all right, everybody, as you all know, I don't drink and I'm going to bed. So Happy New Year.
Yeah, which I think is entirely understandable. But what I quite like to do is to actually have a New Year's Eve with Rick Wakeman and he can do some playing on the merry organ. And then...
Sweet singing in the choir.
Yes, which he can direct.
He can.
Because he is a genius. Okay, so here we are with our first show of the new year. It's 2023 already. No one has spoiled it yet. I say that, we're not sure. Somebody might have already spoiled your new year because some people just have a habit of spoiling things. Just when you think everything is going fine, someone...
Suddenly...
we're talking about the news now, not, you know, the crazy uncle of yours who's just...
Yeah.
Called you up or let himself down, talking about the news. But anyway, very happy New Year. We thought we'd just do what everyone else is doing and just look ahead into this area in which we immerse ourselves. New movies and new series and stuff to look out for. It is awards season.
It is awards season.
Should we get this out of the way? Because everyone will asking you what you think might be happening. So there's obviously who should and who will. All right.
Yes.
And Best Picture Director. And this is not for any specific thing. This is all okay. Awards. All awards, wherever they are. This is what we think.
Well, look, if we're looking at Oscar, because I think, you know, Oscars is kind of the end point. All right. Oscars is...
Oscars and BAFTAs and Globes.
Yeah.
All of them.
In order to give this some kind of sense of coherence, because obviously one of the issues is to do with where films have opened and what they're eligible for. So I am going to take a steer here from Variety, which is the industry bible.
Yes.
Particularly, people always say, you know, why is it that the Variety predictions, you know, line up so closely with the Oscar nominations and things? You go, it's because it's the industry bible and what it says has an effect.
Yes.
So if, you know, if Variety says something, it's like you and I were talking just last night about, imagine being the theatre critic, the butcher of Broadway, who was actually able to close plays. Wouldn't that be terrible? If you had that ability, you'd stop, right? And I think the film critics don't have any ability to change the world. But I do think that Variety, being an industry paper, has its ear to go because it is part of the industry and it also changed it. So, best film, the predicted nominees. So these are the ones that are basically in contention from Variety's point of view are Top Gun Maverick. The Fabelmans, Banshees of Inisherin, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Tar, the Cate Blanchett film, Elvis, Avatar, Way of Water, Women Talking, RRR, which we talked about on an earlier show, and Living. Now, those are the top 10. And what it means is that many of those are likely to be nominated. My own feeling is if I was to pick a winner from those, I would go for Banshees of Inisherin, which I absolutely loved. And I think there is a strong possibility of that happening. But Variety have written very interestingly about, you know, don't count Top Gun Maverick out, not only as a nominee, but as a potential winner. In fact, their category comment on it is, Top Gun Maverick can win Best Picture. I didn't believe it before, nor could I envisage it as a possibility. But boy, do I see it now. Of that list, if you had to pick one from those 10 that Variety have singled out, what would you go for? You love Banshees, right?
Yes, but how do you compare Banshees with
Women
Top Gun
Talking?
Maverick?
Exactly.
I haven't seen all of them. Hopefully,
no, but you've seen many of them.
Yeah, I have seen most of them. I mean, ludicrous to even start. So because Banshees and Top Gun Maverick are so different. But I'll go with Top Gun Maverick because last year you did talk about a different way of looking at five-star reviews, which is not, is it the best film ever made? No. Has it put a foot wrong? No, it hasn't. So on that basis, you give it five stars. I give them both five stars, but I'll go with Variety then.
Okay,
and
fine.
Go with Maverick.
So if we move on from that, let's look at...
Best director?
Best director. Okay, so the Variety top 10 list for best director is slightly depressing in terms of its potential diversity. So they have Steven Spielberg for The Fablemans, which is very autobiographical, and therefore, you know, Martin McDonagh for Banshees of Inisherin, which I think we're all pretty much agreed, mm-hmm. you know, is a contender. Todd Field for Tar. James Cameron for The Way of Water.
Please don't say that every time it comes up.
Sorry, it's going to happen every time.
No, you don't have to do
yes,
that.
Yes, I do.
You don't.
Yes, I do.
You can just say,
nope.
Why don't I say it?
Going to happen.
Every time, you just point at me and I'll say Avatar, Way of Water. Because people will find it incredibly annoying.
Like me in the film. And Joseph...
Yeah, you don't have to watch the film all the time. We have to listen to you saying these words
Excuse me,
all the time.
Have you spent 3.25 hours of your life in The Way of Water?
No, I look forward to it, though.
Well, because Child One quite liked it, didn't
he? Yeah, he quite liked it.
Okay. Anyway, and Joseph Kosinski for Top Gun Maverick. Right. And then in the next, and that's their five. Okay. But from six, then they've then got the Daniels for Everything Everywhere, Baz Luhrmann for Elvis, Sarah Polley for Women Talking, Jennifer Spivey for Woman King, and S.S. Rajamouli for RRR. But that top five list, Spielberg, McDonagh, Todd Field, James Cameron, Joseph Kosinski, is not what you call a broadly diverse field, is it?
It isn't what I'd call a broadly diverse field.
Which is a shame because I think, you know, Sarah Polley, I think, you know, Women Talking should definitely be in the chair. If I had to pick one from that list, I would think Martin McDonagh, but...
Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah, Baz Luhrmann is in the second list, though. And it's. Do you think he would win Best Director for Elvis? I mean, I loved it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, okay, fine. It's all nonsense, but there we go. Okay, on to...
So what we're going to do is actress, actor and screenplay. And then obviously there are 1,000 others, but we won't do
that. Yeah, but it's just, you know, it's fun. So the Best Actor Oscar predictions. Now, I think you will enjoy this, what Variety are suggesting so far. Okay, so their suggestions are... Number one, Brendan Fraser for The Whale. Now, obviously, The Whale is opening here. Everyone's been talking about the performance. Colin Farrell as Best Actor for Banshees of Inisherin.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Austin Butler as Best Actor for Elvis. Uh-huh. Bill Nighy for Living at number four. And Hugh Jackman for The Son. And then in the next five, they've got Tom Cruise for...
Top Gun.
Paul Mescal... For After Sun.
Okay, well done, Paul.
Tom Hanks for A Man Called Otto.
Well done, Tom.
Which you just talked about. Rafe, Don't Call Me Ralph Fiennes for The Menu. And Jeremy Pope for The Inspection. So, firstly, how great that Variety are taking Paul Mescal at least seriously as an outside contender mm-hmm. for that award. If you had to pick from Brendan Fraser, Colin Farrell, Austin Butler, Bill Nighy, Hugh Jackman, who would you go for?
I haven't seen the Brendan Fraser film yet, but I will do because he's going to be around and we'll be talking about that film next year. I think I would go for Bill Nighy.
Because?
Well, Colin Farrell was fantastic.
Absolutely fantastic.
He was also good in 13 Lives, the cave rescue.
Oh, yes, he was. Yeah.
Very
I forgot about that.
Viggo Mortensen, kind of underrated.
Yeah.
But I think Bill Nighy, this is maybe very unprofessional because it just feels like...
It's his moment.
It's his moment. He's the lead role in a movie, which very, very rarely happens. And I thought it was charming and inspiring, really. So I'd go for Bill.
So I'm torn between... You're kind of swaying me with the Bill Nighy thing. Look, Austin Butler is brilliant in Elvis. And the fact is, his performance as Elvis is every bit as good as Rami Malek's performance.
Yes. Actually, yes. I would be very happy if it was him.
So, I mean, you just, in terms of the sweep of the performance, that's pretty astonishing.
Because I think you'd look at that and go, no one else should ever play Elvis again.
That's it. Thank you very much. You know, that's thank you very much. All done. Colin Farrell is fantastic in Banshees. Mm-hmm. But you're kind of winning me round with the Bill Nighy, if not now, when argument. And actually...
Which does influence voters.
I think it does. And living has given him the perfect role. I mean, you said this when we, it's almost like it was, okay, this is what your career has led you to. Mm-hmm. You, no one else could do this role. And that scene in the restaurant when she tells him that her nickname for him is Mr. Zombie, and the symphony of completely repressed expressions that flit across his face as he realizes that she has completely understood that he is the living dead.
Now, I know you didn't follow the World Cup, but...
Who won?
Argentina won.
And was it... Okay.
So it was one of the great matches. Fine. And Lionel Messi, their genius, was universally acclaimed as one of the greatest of all time.
And okay.
So on. And one of the commentators, I think on the BBC, there was it cut to Messi with... You'll see what I'm saying here.
Okay, yeah.
Cut to Messi with the World Cup. And he said, there is a man who is complete. Because he's always been one of the greatest, but he's never won the World Cup.
Right, okay.
And I had...
Oh, that's interesting.
So I'm just thinking, I'm looking at Bill Nighy in Living, and obviously I'm not speaking on his behalf, but it's almost as though if he got awards for this, he would be a man who was complete, because he would be finally recognised as the kind of leading actor that he is.
Okay, okay. Yes, I think that's arguable. And maybe that's, but certainly if he did win, I don't think anybody in their right mind would feel that it was the wrong choice.
What's next?
Okay, so best actress is kind of slightly more difficult, because amongst the variety choices, which are Cate Blanchett-Vatar, which is yet to open, Michelle Williams for The Fablemans, which is yet to open, Daniel Dewale in Till, which is yet to open, Margot Robbie in Babylon, which is yet to open.
Okay, this is and then difficult.
Precisely. Then in the second rung, they've also got in that Michelle Yeoh in Everything Everywhere. And actually, she looks like a kind of pack leader that might be her moment. And then in the next in line, they've got Viola Davis for Woman King, which is an extraordinary performance. Yeah. Olivia Colman for Empire of Light, Jennifer Lawrence for Causeway, Anne de Armas for Blonde, and Emma Thompson for Good Luck to You, Leo Grandi. Now, I think, Leo Grand, isn't it? I think because most of the people listening to the podcast won't have seen at least several of those films, we should probably talk about whether or not we think that Michelle Yeoh has a shot for Everything Everywhere, and I think she does, because I think she's absolutely brilliant in it. But
Viola Davis is fantastic.
Viola Davis is, and when we reviewed... The Woman King here and thinking, no matter what anyone thought about the whatever may be right or wrong about the film, nobody was saying that that isn't a performance that's
demanding an award
that literally stands there and says, just hand me the statuette now. And wouldn't that be great if...
Yeah. Okay, so we've only got half the information on that, but that sounds like a reasonable stab. And best screenplay for
now,
me.
Okay, so here is a really, really interesting thing. Okay, so... Here is the variety predictions for best original screenplay, okay? They have got amongst their... Oh, it says to be updated, but they have got amongst their potential things as best original screenplay, Charlotte Wells' After Sun could be the little movie that could. Other contenders include Banshees of Inisherin, Fablemans, Tar, and Triangle of Sadness. Now, isn't that a fascinating thing? That movie that, I mean, I know you loved it as much as I did and you interviewed Paul Mescal. Wouldn't it be amazing if that was the case?
It would in as much as we talked about this before. What does that screenplay look like?
I know.
Because there was something there.
Just extraordinary. Clearly,
because so much of it is sort of dreamy and ethereal and not in the dialogue. So that's...
The other things that they've got listed as possible outsiders are Baz Luhrmann's Elvis as a possible... Babylon, Till, again, Woman King, again. So there are, so I think that's a very, very hard category.
I'm going to go for Inisherin on that.
I'll tell you what, I wonder whether they've got predictions for... they have predicted for adapted screenplay. Just while, because since you're a writer and since it's kind of... Okay, so their predictions for adapted screenplay are Living, Kazuo Ishiguro, because it's a remake of Ikiru. Women Talking, which is Sarah Polley, so I think he's going to do well. Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery for Rian Johnson.
Very good.
Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, there you go.
And The Whale. Now, you see, I think Ishiguro could well win that for Living, because it is a brilliant screenplay.
Runners and Riders, these will be emerging as we go through 2023. Correspondence at conanmayer.com. Looking ahead for some of the delights that will be tripping into our podcast.
Tripping, Lee.
Lisa Newman, keeping everything crossed that the film and season 5 of Call My Agent will be coming out.
Is there a film of Call My Agent?
There is. There's going to be a movie and then the 5th series.
Oh, okay.
It inspired me to start learning French again after a gap of 30 plus years. Call My Agent was fantastic. And one of those lockdown hits, which everybody discovered there.
Really great.
Hugh McKenna says, The Mother, Spider-Man, Across the Spider-Verse, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning. I watched it, and I'm sure everyone will have seen the trailer.
I haven't seen it, but you told me it's brilliant.
It does look...
And is it? What do you say? It's Tom Cruise doing what?
Driving a motorbike off an incredibly high cliff in Norway, and which goes in with a parachute on his back and then going into a parachute jump, the kind of thing that would be done in James Bond but would never involve James Bond.
No.
But this is all Tom Cruise. He did it 6 times in a day to make sure that they had every take. You know, absolutely jaw-droppingly amazing. Sacra, Atlas, Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer. They were the things that he's looking forward to. Louise says the emotional roller coaster double bill of Oppenheimer and Barbie.
And if you haven't already, and you probably have, watch the trailer for Barbie. It's 2001-tastic.
Neil Carey, Ridley Scott's Napoleon epic Kitbag, relishing the parallels with and differences from Gantz, Napoleon and Kubrick's abortive project.
Yeah.
Luke Henderson, Dune 2, in terms of movies, and The Last of Us for TV shows. Gernick says Dune 2 as well. I've been waiting eagerly, hoping to find an IMAX theatre that'll do a double bill with part one. If you do, book your tickets immediately because it'll sell out. Some of your things that you're looking forward to particularly.
Well, I'm sorry, I say this every year and I'm not going to change now because I'm nearly 60.
Imagine being that old.
The thing I'm looking forward to is the thing that I don't know anything about. And in order to make that point, if you look at the thing that I just did recently, you know, when we talked about our favourite films of the year, right? I did a thing for a newspaper in which I had to write my top 10 films of, you know, 2022, okay? Of those films, I knew nothing in advance about Banshees of Inisherin, Gangi by Katiavadi, Guillermo's Pinocchio, The Quiet Girl, Hit the Road, Moon Age Daydream, Ali and Ava. I mean, Catherine Called Birdie, you know, which turned out, I put in number 10 in my list, absolutely loved. After Sun, none of these were
so
films.
So at the start of last year, if you looked at those, you wouldn't have gone, I'm looking forward to that.
Moon Age Daydream, I wouldn't have mentioned a single one of the films that ended up being in my top 10. So the thing I'm most looking forward to is the thing that I don't know anything about. And it happens every year. I mean, yes, I'm looking forward to Mission Impossible, and I am looking forward to Oppenheimer, obviously. And it was interesting when Gary Oldman came on the show, he just talked about going in to do it for one day because it was Christopher Nolan asked him to do it.
Yep.
But the thing I'm really looking forward to is the thing I don't know anything about.
The thing about Dune Part... Well, Barbie, definitely, as a teaser, that's fantastic.
That trailer is mad.
Dune, when favourably reviewed, you mentioned the fact that but it leaves an awful lot of stuff for Dune 2 to sort out.
Yes, there's a lot of untied shoelaces.
Right, so a lot to kind of go, okay, then over to you.
Yeah, that's right.
And Succession Season 4, I think, and I do think they should have finished at 3. So I'm very...
Did you think 3 went downhill?
Well, I just thought, time to stop. It's time to start. Just yes, now. You know, it's gone to such excess that I'm sure the reason that they're doing season 4 is because it's been so successful and no reason why they shouldn't. But
you know that in the original pitch for the thing, Logan Roy died at the end of season 1.
Okay. Well, I can understand.
And then they
got
to the end of season 1 and Brian Cox went, I don't think so.
Yeah. So let's hopefully think that they do bring that round. But we should definitely spend some time on that when it comes around.
Yeah,
and the great thing is, obviously, that's television adjacent to the theatre and the cinema. So we, as ever, need you to help us out on stuff that you get to see and that we should be concentrating on. So we're kind of done. It's Ben and Anna who are going to be with you next week. We're back on the 13th. New Year's Day is just one of those weird things. When you're growing up, I always used to think New Year's Day was rubbish because people would try and pretend it was, hey, let's have a family meal. And you think, yes, but it's not Christmas, is it? And you have a special roast. Well, why are we doing that? Anyway, but now I'm enjoying it because you get to listen to podcasts and you get some time on your own and everything. There's a lot less
pressure.
You don't have to do stuff. The stuff you have to do is the stuff you've already done.
The thing that you do on, I mean, New Year's Day feels to me like the day that you go for a very long walk.
Yes.
If you go to the point to point park,
it's full. Everyone's doing the same thing.
But there is something unpressurized about it.
Yes.
New Year's Eve has happened, and that's all. And there are so many movies about, you know, the pressure to find the right New Year's Eve and all that kind of thing. But yes, you don't get so many movies about, okay, it's New Year's Day. That stuff is all behind you. The one thing that I would say is I wish everybody a very happy New Year.
Yes.
And, you know, let's hope it's a good one.
One of my favorite Christmas songs, which is Smith and Burrows doing When the Thames Froze, has a general refrain of, let's hope the next beats the last. And I always think it's so understated. You go, yes, let's just hope that this year beats the last. And we will do our best to make sure that this particular podcast is even better value.
That's a high watermark.
That's true. So maybe I'm going to withdraw that. Like every New Year resolution will be withdrawn immediately.
My New Year's resolution is I'm going to give up playing the violin.
And I am going to stop eating cabbage. What an inspirational world we live in. By the way,
yes,
January the 13th.
What about it?
Sam Mendes.
Is he on the show?
No, I just thought I'd say Sam Mendes.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, he's on the show. Wonderful. Yeah, something that's to look forward point. To. Thank you very much.
That's like an Easter egg at the end of the podcast.
Is it? If anyone got this far.
Do the voice.
Do the...
Oh. I'm having to dredge it up.
Dredge it up for the cutter. And scene.
January the 13th. Sam Mendes. Happy New Year. I am outside checking your bins. My word, you've left a lot of rubbish.